Welcome back to class, everybody. I am your absolutely snowed in Professor Ethan.
And I'm your stone cold Professor Ricky. And that is mostly because of the weather, but not exclusively because of the weather.
Steve Austin style.
Absolutely a rugged man in the elements. Nothing phases me. Nothing phases me. I guess we're not in the lab together today because we not only got a exorbitant amount of snow for where we are doesn't handle snow well. So that's a pretty gnarly mix of just a shutdown of all kinds, frankly.
Yeah, pretty nutty. You know, we live in the Southeast. Everybody knows that. But, you know, we got like probably 8 inches of snow.
And, yeah, that's actually a pretty good guess.
And it was like kind of a surprising scenario because it wasn't like, it didn't all happen at once. You know what I mean? It's just like shit on us for an entire day long.
It was a slow build for sure. Like I would keep checking outside like it has to have finished by now, right? Nope. Like an hour later, my car is even more buried in snow and it just kept escalating and it's a very slow burn. It's so funny the region we're in, like how much there's probably people that are listening right now like, oh my God, 8 inches? Get over yourselves. You don't even know what snow is. Trust us. We are northern born. We understand what real snow is, but we live in a region where they just do not have any of the tools to handle it. So even a little is a lot down here. Like things are shut down. No one's driving. Yeah. Nothing's happening. Yeah.
I went to the store like probably maybe Friday or maybe even Saturday.
Yeah.
And no, I went Friday and there was literally nothing on the shelves. It was wild.
Really?
It felt an actual apocalypse.
What's so funny is that sometimes down here in years past, they will even predict snow that doesn't happen and you'll still see that. You go to the store and all these bread, eggs, milk, like you're living in like the turn of the century Little House on the Prairie. Like you got all the essentials for like a 19th century family living in the middle of nowhere. And you're just like, is this? And then you go to the frozen sections, everything's still there. I don't know what you saw. I didn't quite go to a grocery store, which is to my detriment. So I made some real ramshackle, like tortilla pizzas and stuff because I couldn't go to the store today. But like, what did you see that was gone? Was it the essentials? Was it frozens? Like, what did you see that was missing?
You know, the one thing I thought that was really funny that was missing was there was only one bag left of Tostitos. Tortilla chips.
Really?
Which so I found really odd. It's like, that's the thing. Everyone's like, we need tortilla chips fucking now.
Hey, honey, do you think we need like the essentials to feed our children breakfast? Nah. Get the scoops. We need the scoops. Get the queso too, just in case. But you also got to remember, it's NFL wildcard weekend. I wonder if that might have been a compounding factor here, where like they had like, you know, snacks for the games. You know,
I don't know. It felt very much more like a snow issue than a I don't know, football, like normal, like even like national championship and stuff. Like there's not normally issues, right?
I think
potentially like you know. They are saying like there's all of these different issues with, you know, supply chain and stuff.
Okay. Right? Yeah, that could maybe contribute to part of it. Like they're not restocking the shelves factor. So whatever you see on the shelves are what they got.
Right.
You know,
I'm just thinking it's like sort of like an exacerbating scenario, right? Where like,
yeah,
like normally it wouldn't be that bad, but it was like, oh yeah, there's snow, and by the way, we also didn't bring a truck. Oops.
Oopsies. But yeah, so like, I don't know, we've had some pretty bad snows down here in the past. What do you think the stacks? I mean, this is a pretty hefty snow.
I think this is potentially the most snow we've ever received in my lifetime here, but what will be the, I guess, deciding factor is how long it's going to take for like the Southeast to change back to like 45 degrees or whatever it would be to start melting snow.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking, right? Is that like, that this may have been one of, if not the highest snowfalls we've had, but the real danger in the Southeast is that it'll rise just above freezing for things to melt, and then the night will freeze it all again, and then everything freezes. Then you're talking power outages, water stoppages. Like, that's where it gets real dangerous down here, is that weird fluctuation right above and below freezing, and there's just a lot of water on the ground. And then once it just melts a bit, freezes a bit, and it just keeps going back and forth, it can be really dangerous for the infrastructure down here. And we've seen it in the past. Remember back in like middle school, we had like the great icing where, like, I don't know, my family lost power for like 4 days.
That wasn't middle school, bro. That was fucking like senior year of high school.
No way. There was, yes, like a seventh. There was one in like seventh grade though.
Okay, there was one. Yeah, like literally the streets were ice, and I ice skated on the streets of my neighborhood.
Yes, yes, that was the one. It was like seventh or eighth grade. Or like, I remember going to a friend's cabin that we both mutually know and watching Kindergarten Cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? It's the perfect movie, perfect winter movie. Duh.
Sounds perfect. Yeah,
it was pretty sweet. But as far as like legit sticking snowfall, this might rank up at the top. But speaking of rankings, this week, we're talking about a show that I would argue could have been probably this year's first dark horse. And I don't know if there are a lot of individuals that were like hyped for what we're going to talk about this week, but whether you were hyped and you knew, like if you know, you know, or you weren't hyped and had no idea this was coming and it, like myself, totally blindsided your ass. This show is one of the darkest horses I think that will happen this year in terms of non-hype leading up and then absolute hype once it finally started airing. Ethan, what are we talking about this week?
Yeah, so this week we are taking on the 2021 to 2022 banger Ranking of Kings.
Yes, a Studio Wit production that absolutely
rips.
It rips, but it just doesn't rip. It subverts in a way from a visual narrative, and it's not a completely subversive, off-the-wall kind of thing. It uses a lot of tropes in high fantasy classic animes and narratives and stuff like that, but the way they employ them, it's a mixture of subversion, refinement. There's a really beautiful balancing act here, all wrapped in an aesthetic you would never expect. And I don't know if you felt this way, but from just gazing upon the aesthetic, I was ready to write this sucker off. I was ready to not touch this sucker. I don't know if you felt the same way.
Yeah, it's definitely got like a pretty strange art style that almost feels like a Western like animation.
Yeah, it'd be,
it's almost
as
got
if,
like some like Jetsons. Yeah. I don't know, like. But like that old school kind of like Flintstones-esque like animation style almost is what it kind of feels like to me. I don't know why.
Yeah, I can actually see that perspective. It's as if like an old animation studio. We're talking like maybe a Hanna-Barbera were to like come out of its cave in 2022 and be like, we're going to try an anime. And they did. But, you know, I think that once we get a little deeper into this episode, I want to talk about, I think, how that aesthetic that Studio Wit employed actually really enhances the narrative because of the way it bounces back and forth between your kind of super poppy, saturated, almost childlike color book aesthetic to what I would argue is an engaging and adult narrative. But here we are. Let's set the stage just a little bit, you know. What we got here, you got a high fantasy situation, right? You're in a world with light magic, kingdoms, kings, and, you know, swords, knights. You got the whole gambit, right? We've seen this all before. Our main character, as we're sitting around, you know, in a world that ranks their kings, there's some organization or just some kind of hierarchy of the kings, based on not just their prowess as an individual, but their ability to lead and grow and foster a kingdom. You have I want to say, do you remember the kingdom that this particular one is placed in?
I'm not sure that they've ever mentioned the actual name of it.
That's a good point. I was just thinking that I didn't quite catch that. But you have a kingdom led by a very, very high-ranked king. And the guy's got a prince. And the prince's name is Boji. And Boji is a fucking G. I'm just going to say
that.
Did
they ever say what boss's rank was?
7.
Okay, yeah, so
it's 7. He's up there. He's a big boy. He's a big boy in the game. Like, everyone knows the name. And we see that later in the show when people are exposed to either the prince or the king himself, or they hear about the kingdom he's leading. They know that the king Bose, or boss, depending on... I watched Little Dub, Little Sub. I don't know if they called him Bose or boss in the dub.
Called him boss.
Boss. It's boss with an E, but we're going with boss because that actually sounds fucking awesome. So King yeah. Boss. Oh, yeah. He's a big boy. He's a descendant of the giants. Man is head to toe dripping in strength. But you have his son, Prince Boji, who is kind of devoid of all the gifts of his father. He is quite small. S-M-O-L. Very small. He can't hear and he can't speak. To what end does that make a good king, right?
I think this is kind of like one of those scenarios where I would have never expected them to tackle sort of like the disability. I don't even know what you would call that, but like the idea of having a disability in a show like so extensively, because it's not even just him. Like, it happens over and over again as you get farther into season one. I assume that there's going to be more because like what we're up to right now, there's 13 episodes out and they're at like a relatively pivotal moment. So I'm assuming like that'll finish. So just so everyone knows, we're going to be talking about really the first half here. And and I guess just like the overall vibe of the show. But I did, you know, like I said, wanted to mention that like they're like tackling this idea of these people with disabilities and like kind of like, I guess how the world can view them as weak, but they could potentially be like the strongest of us. Because like to be able to like keep going and like keep striving to like be better and continue living is like takes much more strength than like somebody who's gifted, which I love that kind of undertone for the show.
Yeah, and there's I think you might be even kind of calling back to a certain scene I wanted to bring up later where one character explicitly kind of outlined this theme to another character. But we'll get into that in a bit. But yeah, despite this disability of this prince, and when I say small, we're talking small. Like, he is, like, even, he's smaller than a lot of the kids. Like, he is chibi in all respects. Like, but his head is always held so high in public. He cares so little, seemingly, about the people, you know, that you see, and they drop it up top, right? They kind of tease him behind and in front of his back. They, you know, it's not, the show is not shy about the public's reception of someone with these disabilities. And to your point, we see this very nuanced dynamic of this main character with these disabilities, you know, both in public and in private. In public, it's kind of twofold, where he's, you know, on the surface, he's a person with these disabilities and just has the strength to keep just living his life and doing what he wants to do and needs to do. But he's also a prince of this kingdom. So he also almost has a duty to be as regal and as tough and as strong outwardly, externally as he can. But behind closed doors, it clearly affects the kid. Like, it clearly affects Boji.
Right.
You know, and they don't shy away from showing that. And right then and there, and I think it's like the first episode, they show this dynamic of, you know, the true feelings versus his persona when he's out in public, that you kind of get as a high wrinkled student that I know you all are, that you're like, whoa, this narrative is not afraid to touch some interesting topics despite being a color book aesthetic. And that's the first moment you're like, you may have something special on your hands, because you didn't expect to get such a nuanced take on some sensitive subjects in such what would look like a beautifully painted world and beautifully painted characters. So I from the rip, you're right. The way they touch on these things, makes it a very standout show up top, and it only gets better from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe when I kind of heard, you remember we did whatever season it was that this was coming out, we did like our little read through. Like our preview read through of like what this is supposed to, you know, the little blurb they put on there, right?
Sure.
And I thought it was going to be something very, very different than it ended up being. Did you have that like sort of same idea? Because like when you read through, it's like there's a ranking of kings and Boji the prince wants to like rise up it. So like in my head, I'm thinking, oh, okay, this is going to be like some sort of tournament arc or something like that.
Interesting. I'm in your camp where I thought it was going to be something different, but I think I went a different direction. I thought it was going to be kind of a homebody slice of life, and I'll elaborate what that means. I thought it was going to be more of a story about this prince who is clearly deficient in the eyes of not only the royalty in charge, but also the kingdom at large, that like he was going to prove himself by winning over the people of his kingdom. I didn't think we were going to go further than the borders of the walls of this kingdom, right? And then slowly, you know, you have a king, what I assumed, obviously, if we're learning about a prince, there's going to be some succession arc element to it. But I thought it was going to be like Boji gaining the trust of his people through sheer kindness, which I think there's in part a bit of that, obviously, in the show. But I didn't think it would span the world in the way it did and really flesh out the world building, which is quite robust. Like, this world building is phenomenally paced. I didn't expect that at all. So it turned from what I thought would be like this real nice homebody feel-good slice of life in a high fantasy setting to a real almost shonen, but in a really, I don't know, beautifully paced way that was more focused on the nuance of the characters around Boji, but also as well as his progression. Like, the way they back and forth that is so beautiful. So, yeah, I thought it was going to be something much different. But I think you and I maybe had been pretty divergent on what we thought the show would be. But once we watched it, we're aligned in what the show is trying to be. And it's really, really wonderful. Because, I mean, how would you genreize this show? And I know that's a made-up word, but if you were to put tags on this, what tags would you put on this show?
I mean, I think it is like a shonen, like, to be really fair, but
right.
Maybe I think my tags would be shonen. It would be king fantasy. It would be
fair.
It would be disabilities. It would be,
it's a hell of a tag, but it's not false. It's not false. It's
it would
real.
Fratricide.
I feel like you should be doing the Mal tags. I think your representation of these shows are probably more accurate than anything they tag on Mal.
Maybe a little too, like,
a little too on the nose.
Yeah, too on the nose, but I'm okay with doing that.
Well, shit, man. Like, I think people would probably look at your rant, like your genre tags, and be like, "Yeah, I think I have a better understanding of this show than shonen fantasy adventure."
Right.
Ta-da. Like. That's,
yeah,
that's
I do think they maybe oversimplify a lot of those, in my opinion. You know what I mean? You don't get any info from that. It's like every show is that. Like the only thing that could be less like informational is if it said isekai.
I guess probably, yeah. And that's the thing, right? Is I feel like maybe that's the common denominator. Like those genre tags have to be so simple that everyone knows all 14 of the tags that exist, and I'm not going to hear that there are any more than that, because that's basically all that's used. But if, you know, what you said is technically correct, I mean, that's all real. So, I mean, where does this story start to get, I think, really interesting? I would argue maybe about two or three episodes in, we get one of our other titular characters named Kage, and I love Kage. He's just interesting in a couple ways, but he's kind of this weird shadow creature that first tries to swindle Boji because of the way he is just so giving and so caring and so wholesome. And then he kind of sees him act, and then his walls break down, and then he's like the first person ever to be in Boji's corner, because like we said prior, he's been kind of clowned on for his disabilities for so long, not just because of the individual, because he's supposed to be the king after King Boss kind of, you know, leaves this realm. And then now there's the succession element, but he's never had a guy in his corner. Kage is that first real guy that he perceives to be in his corner. And I don't know your thoughts on the character of Kage, but I think I'm going to say something bold. He might be one of the most important characters in this show.
I don't think that's super bold. I think it's a bad characterization of the show, though, to say he's like the first guy in his corner. Like, Boji has had a lot of people that are like nice to him. Like, first of all, his stepmother comes in and like does her absolute mother effing best to like be a good mother to him. She literally learns sign language just to be able to communicate with him. You've got Domus, who was a good guy originally for him, like learns sign language, teaches him, wants to make him the best that he can. Like, I just don't want to like undercharacterize some of these other people, because I think Hilling, I think, is actually probably the best character in the entire show. And it's because I think for me, how like drastically there's a shift from like hating her to loving her.
Oh, like, there 100% is. Yes, I agree with you there.
Yeah.
But let me be super clear. I'm taking that stance from the perspective of Boji, not from a viewer that has kind of narrative omnipotence, like that can see the history before Boji understands it. From Boji's perspective at the time, in his mind, Queen Hilling is not on his side. You know, Doris is kind of on his side, and arguably that's actually probably a more fair point, that he probably perceives Doris as someone who's in his corner. But Kage is the first one to outright say, I think you have the potential to be like a powerful king. I'm going to be on your corner because I'm betting on you. Doris is nice to him, but we see in the show that Doris, his sword master, one of the higher rankings in this kingdom, in terms of, you know, the king and queen's right hands and kind of like, you know, a higher up, he's nice to Boji. He's training Boji. He's doing his best with Boji, but Boji doesn't have any strength. And I say that actively. Like, it's not that he's weak. He literally lacks the capacity for strength and growth. And that we'll save for Spoiler City here in a bit. But Kage is the first character, in spite of that, to say to him, I think you could be a great king. I'm going to sit in your corner because I want to see where you go, and I'm going to help you get there. And I don't know. I kind of like that, the juxtaposition that we have here from a narrative pacing, where we are revealed that other characters really have been supporting him in a very real way up to this point, but they've had their reservations or they've had their hangups due to other characters, but Kage had no such strings. So they thrusted him as kind of like, he's the right-hand man. He's the right-hand dude, as far as Boji's concerned. So that's kind of where my perspective is coming from, is that Kage is the first one to be upfront and genuine about his support, you know?
Well, I think it's more that he can be like a homie at the same level that he is, rather than like a teacher, you know what I mean? I think that's...
Do you want to go into that a little bit? Because his backstory is quite relatable when it comes to Boji's experience.
Yeah, I mean, so Kage comes from the Kage clan, or the Shadow clan. And it's basically these little shadow people who were kind of cast in this system where they're like skill that everyone lauds them for, and sort of what they've been typecast as is like assassin, because they're able to like, you know, skirt around in a 2D form almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Along the walls and hide in shadows and shit, and they can shoot like shit out of the shadows, you know what I mean? Like
He's got some interesting power set which are subtle.
Yeah, he reverse Kirby's.
Yes, so he has what video game experts would call hammer space, where he just seems to have unlimited inventory within himself, and he can just spit shit out. He can consume and spit shit out seemingly from a void, right? If you think about, like, I don't know, whenever I hear hammer space, I think of like a Paper Mario, or like just any RPG that has like unlimited inventory, and you just have like walls and walls of shit in your pockets seemingly. And he has that in real life in this show, which is really cool. So all of the Shadow Clan members, they have all of these skill sets kind of built into their body to make them really, really good assassins. They're really good assassins. And they kind of understand that lot in life from a generational standpoint. You know, they teach their children that, like, who we are, our bodies are really good for assassin work, and that's just what we do. And Kage, he's had a pretty troubled past. You know, like, this kingdom actually accused the entire clan of betraying the royalty of the kingdom of ages past or generation past, and they wiped them out based on that accusation. And Kage managed to escape and live a pretty shit childhood. So when he is approaching Boji and kind of really understands this kid, he understands the plight of someone being shunned by society, even, you know, behind their back, because of the way that they were born, the way that they've been slotted into life because of who they are. So I love that dynamic between the two, because that's like a really nice, genuine, and natural understanding of each other's situations. And it makes for Kage and Boji to be a really nice pair together. I don't know. It's a nice bag.
Yeah, I mean, I think, but I also mean, like, him being a kid and Boji being a kid, right? Like,
they're both kids. They're both chitlins.
Well,
sure.
Like, just in comparison to everybody else, like, everybody else is like a older teacher or a guard, right? So it's kind of the first time he's got like a homie, like a friend, right? And yeah. You really, that is like, I think a glaring, like, I guess, thing that you see, right, is that Boji seems to be like pretty much utterly alone in terms of people from his own age, other than his brother, who, like, at certain point, like, I guess, changes his mind about like protecting Boji, and kind of changes to like, he's in my way sort of a scenario.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
But I don't know. I thought it was like quite striking that this kid, very nice, like you never really see him do anything bad at all, right? And he's like,
it's mischievous at best, really.
Well, like, even then, I don't think he's even done anything mischievous, and he's just like such a like bright spot for the kingdom in terms of like being a nice guy, but in this world where strength is all that matters, it's like they all kind of view him as a lesser. They, you know, everybody makes fun of him in the town.
Oh.
All the people make fun of him and shit like that. And
you're talking about Boji, not Kage. Sorry, I messed that up. Yeah. You're talking about Boji. And yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying he doesn't have any, like, friends at all.
Right. So there's one element here that I wanted to bring up before I went on to Boji, kind of his skill set and what makes him viable in this world. The Kage-Boji kind of dynamic. This is not a unique one in anime, I'm realizing. There is a number of shows that utilize this dynamic of a nonverbal great character from a, you know, emotional, holistic view. A character that is good to their core, but they are unable to speak, yet there is another character in the show that understands them intimately enough to translate to everyone else their true thoughts. I'm thinking Nezuko in Demon Slayer. Hear me out on this one. We have, in both shows, a character that is unable to verbalize and articulate their intentions to the larger world, and in their inability to do so, the world perceives them in a certain way. Then you have another character, like Tanjiro in one and Kage in another, that can manifest that true intention to the world at large, and then trust is garnered for the both of them. It is a binary character system that allows for kind of one to never say a word and be loved by everyone in the world and the audience as well, but the other to be just as loved for articulating, but also believing in that sentiment, which is it's a very interesting trope that has started to arise in the last couple years of anime, where I feel there's a couple other shows that do this. The Boys had one as well, the Amazon Prime show, where they had a character who couldn't communicate with the rest, but someone else could translate for them. You had them as a unit, and both characters benefited in their perception of the world and the audience as a byproduct. So I love this dynamic so much because it endears me to the one that never says a word, but their intentions are the one that are changing the world, and the other that is willing to stand by them when no one else will, but becomes their ambassador to the world. Kage is Boji's ambassador. If you notice, there's a number of characters, and not just a small number, where they have to listen to Kage to understand Boji's like meaning and intentions and plan of action going forward, that endears people like Despa and the captain in the underworld and everything like that to both of them. They both benefit from being near each other. So I think that this show uses that dynamic to a very useful effect to endear us to not just one, but both, because of one ideal of one of them. And it's really cool. And, you know, we never really get an understanding as to why Kage can understand intuitively Boji, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't actually matter. We can ask all day, how does Kage understand him? Doesn't even matter. It works on all levels. So that dynamic is, I think, a highlight of why those two main characters are so engaging in the show. One is the good source of truth and wholesomeness, and the other one is putting their all into believing it, but also externalizing that philosophy of goodness and wholeness to the world and making Boji feel seen and heard. And that's a really positive aspect of the show that I think works for everybody. But I don't know. I don't know if that's like something you feel. I don't know if that's something if everyone feels, but that's something I feel that makes the show good.
Well, I think in both of these scenarios, you look at the, like, let's just say Nezuko and Boji, for instance, like, yeah, they're both seemingly extremely innocent, right? Based on the fact, like their disability, so to speak, like being unable to communicate, and then like the shit that's happened to them, it is just like very endearing, to the point where, you know, everybody just wants to protect them and like love them, right? Like from an audience standpoint. So I think it's like I don't know if it's like heinous, but it's kind of like a sneaky way to just make one of your main characters super loved, like give them a disability or give them like some horrific shit that's happened to them and like make them unable to communicate.
Yeah, it's honest. I think it's that is 100% correct, but I think that doesn't really land without the element of us as the audience understands their plight more than even Kage or Tanjiro or anybody else, right? We've seen all that hardship firsthand, and their inability to be heard or seen in those moments hits the audience the hardest because we know the most, right? And it feels so cathartic to have somebody like a Kage or a Tanjiro finally fight, not just like fight for them, but make their, you know, perspective known. That, like, think about it, right? That in episode like one or two, we see Boji so hurt behind closed doors about him being clowned on and the things he wants to communicate, but just comes out as noises. And once he finally has Kage to, like, this is what he's saying, this is what he's actually meaning in really concrete terms, it's like, yes, thank you. Somebody is telling this kid's story, telling his perspective on the certain things. And once it's known, that's when you're cooking with gas, man. Like, people hear Boji now, right? And I don't know. There's a catharsis element here when finally what we saw as Boji's very wholesome perspective and the way he handles himself is made manifest in a very clear cut terms that everyone understands, and people finally get insight into the brain that cannot verbalize its own thoughts. That's that as an audience, because we've been sitting here like, somebody has to listen to this kid because he's a good guy. And then finally, when he's heard, we're like, yes. So there's a catharsis element here. I think that's really important to speak to, because I think that's what makes this show very potent, is that this character is finally being heard by everyone. And it gives him a weapon he never had before, which is communication. It's taken for granted once taken away. You know, it's very interesting. But yeah. And that only gets more potent as we go through the story. This story's got a lot of meat to it. I didn't think I saw that coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a lot of nuance, I think, that a lot of other shows don't even, like, try to mess with. I will say, like downside of this is I felt maybe, like, episode 7-8, the story kind of slowed down a little bit for me, to where, like, I don't know, because I expected it to be kind of like a... basically a king tournament, right? I kind of expected more battle and more like kind of interesting scenarios to go on rather than this kind of like succession war going on in the background. And then there's like some real insane tomfoolery with even the succession. And I don't know. It just seems like this show, while still great, they are really piling on a lot of like interesting supernatural shit on top of it, to where it's like, okay, like what else could possibly go fucking wrong? You know what I mean?
I wanted to bring that up a bit, is that, yeah, there's the story here, while it never felt like it was giving me too much I could handle at any one time, it's opening a lot of threads very early, which, you know, you and I have watched enough shows now where that could be a bit of a red flag, you know, because if you open so many of these threads, who's to say that you have to close any of them? You know, a legendary show will close all of these in a very, you know, concise and pretty way. But I hear you on this. Like, this is...
Well, to like comment on that quickly, it is a lot of threads, but they're like... This is a pretty abstract concept, so everybody has to stick with me here, but...
Turn your wrinkles on, guys. Yeah. Turn your wrinkles on.
They are threads that are not very spread from the center of the story. Like, almost so much that it's like... I don't know. Like, the story is not insanely appealing to me, to be honest, having seen the full, like, 13 episodes. Like, I think...
Interesting.
I think if I didn't love Boji so much and like healing, like, it's honestly not that great of a story. Like, it's pretty, like, reused kind of shit. Like man in the mirror being an asshole, like, pulling the strings behind this, like, crazy shit going on, right? Like, that's not really that new. That's not very interesting. And, like, without this, like... Boji character being the kind of centerpiece, and this idea of like, this handicapped kid is gonna actually like live up to his everyone, you know, his own ideals of like what a king is. Like, that's what I'm waiting for, and that's like literally all I'm waiting for.
So it's funny you say that, because I had that thought a bit about mid first core, you know, but I've come full circle on this, where, one, I think we've said this at shows we reviewed at this point in the past, we're only getting the first core of obviously a two-core first season.
Yeah.
So it from that perspective, what we have now, I have to kind of reluctantly agree with you here, where, yeah, there's a lot of stuff close to home, and I think it does the show early on a bit disservice by putting Boji so far out from where these threads exist, because he's clearly the main driver, right? So they separated Boji spatially. He went on this mini adventure that turned into a pretty grand adventure, but a lot of this shit's happening at home. You know, yeah, the magic mirror and Daedra and Boss coming, you know, around in a weird way, which I think we're pretty much in spoiler city, so I'll get to a lot of the things that are happening at home here in a second. But, you know, if you have the main driver going so far away from the setting where all these other story elements are happening, that's, I think, both a good and bad, where you have this kind of shonen arc happening all the way out in the boonies, right? But you have a lot of the crisis happening at home. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because his newfound advancement and growth could leverage and tilt the scales of all those threads at home of those conflicts. But also you have this weird bouncing back and forth of like this, I would almost argue, a lighthearted adventure of Boji over here getting stronger with people who are just seemingly okay with him being around and just happen to be like, yeah, I just like the cut of your jib. I'm going to train your ass up. Things seem pretty good for Boji over here, all things considered. And then you have absolute strife and mayhem happening all the way back at home. So there's this weird kind of disjunct story happening. So I hear what you're saying, the fact that a lot of these threads aren't happening too far from home. If Boji's not there to advance a lot of those in a meaningful way, it could feel like you're watching two different shows here almost. In my head, I think that's correcting itself. There's course correct here in the second core. Now that we've got episode 13, you can kind of see him coming back to the fraying edges of those threads. But I think you're not too far off. Or the threads, all of them being opened and they're good for world building, it's not going far enough or in a way that, you know, seems super meaningful, but I'm curious to see where the second core kind of ties all those things together, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you know at all if this is like a long like novel or if there's a lot of volumes to this?
Let me give that a little Google, my friend.
If you don't know, you don't know. I'm thinking like if there's a shitload of volumes, like they're going to have to do something a little like trickier. Right?
Okay.
With the ending?
Yeah, so it is a manga series that has 12 volumes. Not a big boy. Not a big boy.
Well, so, this feels much like, I would hope, maybe 3 or 4 volumes only have passed so far. But I don't know how that works.
Yeah, here's the hoping, right? You know, I hear you, though, right? Like, we don't really know how much they covered in just that first core, right? If they covered, like, 7 of the 12 volumes, then Jeezy Pete, right? But
well, because you know, then I would say like this is gonna be a very like rudimentary,
yeah,
like,
right,
like easily wrapped up in a bow kind of ending, and that's not what I want for this story. Like, I think, I don't know, I feel like maybe as like such a seasoned anime vet at this point, right? Like I mean, you guys have all listened to my top 100 list, and like if you really think about it, there's probably a whole 100 other shows I easily could have mentioned. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah,
at this point, I've watched so much anime content. Like, I think I really need, for me to be super engaged and like pulled into a story, I need like some wild shit to happen, like deceit, but not like normal deceit, like happens in this. It needs to be like big brain, like Death Note level, you know, make yourself, you know, completely forget your own powers for 16 months and then,
yeah, right,
in a weird way gain them back just at the exact right time to start your Kira killing spree again, you know. Just like, it needs to almost be like so big brain at this point for me to be like super bought in, or like such an epic. I think that's kind of my other issue, is at least right now with like other like audiobooks and stuff like that, I'm listening to like 1,000-page fantasy epics right now.
Interesting.
Which is like,
okay,
70 hours of audiobook. And it's like,
mm-hmm,
you know, all of this stuff there's like so much world building. There's power system building. There's all this stuff. Like I literally, the book that I'm reading, I'm on the third one. Like, I know every fucking thing about these goddamn, like, countries going on. Like, I know, like, their fucking royal lines. I know all of their, like,
lineage right. of everybody.
I know, like, yeah. important nobles. I know not important nobles. I know, you know, city guard folk. Like, it's actually just nuts. And then, like, you get to a show like this, and, you know, like, 14 characters matter, maybe. And then, like, even at that point, it's like they're trying to make characters matter, and they're just, like, complete fodder garbage cans that I don't care about.
Now, you know what? One of the statements, that last statement you just said, I think I kind of semi-disagree on
the way
they handle... Well, that's just not true. Some of these side characters...
Okay,
they,
I'm wrong.
One of us is wrong. But some of these side characters they introduced, they all seem... The cast doesn't seem very large. Right. But I mean, they all seem to have their own personalities,
really?
Backstories that matter. Like,
do you care about City Guard number 1, 2, or 3?
I do about Anna, City Guard number 1 in the first.
Exactly. So 2 and 3 don't matter to you. Wow. Wow.
Right. But that's not who I'm talking about, baby.
It's crazy that you're simping for one so hard.
No, you know what? I'll tell you someone who I simp for as a side character. Dorche. He's literally
a tank. He's invincible, I swear.
He is a tank. So I think we're in Spoiler City, USA, obviously. So I'm going to give a very quick rundown of some of the side threads that are going on aside from Boji. So because Boji goes on what seemingly amounts to a small adventure. After kind of getting swindled out of his kingly succession, he's got a brother. Brother is Prince Daedra, who is from the second wife of King Boss. First wife, she's a giant, Queen Shea, I think her name is. Shinna. And it is said in the show that, you know, giant women can only have one kid ever in their life. And, you know... That is where Boji comes from. He's the first son, but Daedra is the second, and he's kind of been influenced by this magic mirror Snow White bullshit. You know, like, who is the fairest of them all? It's you, my king. You're gonna be fucking king, baby. And he just got sucked up by that shit. So he basically usurped the throne because no one in power besides actually no one. Maybe even the king didn't quite consider Boji, who was the rightful heir to the throne, a viable option for a king. Given the understanding in this world, the kings have rankings, those rankings matter, and that's, like Ethan said, a bit shelved as a story narrative. And that's fine. We see that a couple times, but it's shelved all the same. And then, at the last minute, in the will, despite King Boss saying Boji is going to be king after me, the Queen Hildring?
Hilling?
Yeah. There's no D. Yeah, Hilling. Basically kind of said, you know, I veto this shit. My son, the second son, Prince Daedra, should be the one to take the throne after King Boss passes from the illness we see him have in the show. And fun fact, a lot of people agree with him because they took a vote, which is quite interesting. So he is given kingship.
Yes,
and
but
Boji,
I do want to say, like, Hilling is a actually phenomenal person and a good mother.
No, she is. She's a fantastic
She only
character.
Did that just to, like, essentially make sure that Boji doesn't get, like, shit on because of his disability.
Right.
And, you know, basically thinking that Daedra is going to be able to handle the pressures of kingship in a much easier way than Boji. And so,
yes,
like,
yes,
I don't
yes.
want anyone out there to even, like, think for 1 minute that Hilling is a bad bitch. I mean, she's
Ethan.
A bad bitch, but she's not
Ethan.
Bad bitch.
Ethan, are you simping for the queen right now?
100%.
I love it. But yeah, what you said is 100% true. She's trying to have this perspective. You first think that she's being a shithead and, like, oh, he's too weak. No, we learn later that the queen is really trying to protect Boji in a way that she feels like she can. The duties and the burden of kingship do not match Boji's clearly bone frail shoulders. Like, paper mache frame cannot carry the weight of kingship.
Well, I think it's more like the expectation of what they think a king is just very different from what he measures up to. But one thing I did find very odd was he basically shits on Daida in his fight with him.
I was going to bring that up here in a second.
And then everyone's just like, you lost. And he's like, what? I'm literally like untouchable, bro.
He is. He has ultra instinct to the nines. So Boji doesn't have any strength, which in this world is a big no-no.
Like actually strength stat equals zero.
Yes, like he has the inability to even gain more strength. He just lacks that capacity. But the one thing he does have because of his disabilities is he's had his entire life, like almost as a second or like a second nature, sixth sense, that he's had to read movements because he's had to read such subtle things as reading lips and reading intentions because he can't hear any of that shit. So his dodging ability, we're talking like Ultra Instinct Omen levels of dodging. Like, he literally dodges as a second reflex. And in this world, that's considered cowardly as fuck. So when Daedra and Boji fight for the first time in earnest and spar,
he also teleports. Boji, I think we should just mention that quickly.
He literally teleports. That's how fast of a dodger he is. And it's so fucked because in any anime battle ever, like versus battle, I think people would give it to Boji if he had the right weapon. But in this world of chivalry and honor and do the things the way traditionally they should have been done, that's considered cowardly. In a certain scene that we were talking about, Daedra and Boji's skirmish that they had, his swordsman teacher, Dorsa, basically told him, this style is unbecoming of a king. You have to sit there and not dodge. And he gets his shit rocked because he's not strong. So Daedra beats the shit out of him, essentially. And everyone around him is not only impressed by the dodging ability of Boji, but appalled at the beatdown he receives from Daedra, who is a more traditional sword fighter in terms of kingly strength. So it's a very fascinating dynamic between the two, and a very fascinating look into the world where this skill that is nothing less than OP is considered weak and uncouth by the strongest traditionally that the world considers, which goes back to kind of one of the show's motifs, that the strengths of one that the world doesn't see could, you know, yield great fruit when fostered. And we see that later in a different thread. But I mean, what are your thoughts on Daedra as a character, Prince Daedra? I mean, I liked him. He's easily manipulated, but at the end of the day, I really like the kind of character he is. Because he still has that kind of...
In what regard? I feel like he was extremely unlikable, like, intentionally, right? Like, they want you to not like him so that you're like, Boji should be king, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But here's the thing, right? He was given the position of king, and at the precipice of an easy way out, like, given the strength of his father, through unsavory means.
The easy way out is killing himself.
Right. I mean, it's like, he could have, like, not knowing what he knew, all he knew was, drink this weird shit that... Well, that scene was wild. Like, there's like, 7 or 8 arcane logistics that happened to give him essentially an elixir that were... All of them were unsavory. And in the eyes of Daedra watching that, and like I said, we're in spoiler town, King Boss dies of an illness that he had, unspoken but true illness in the show. And through various means of this magic, we now know now, evil mirror, utilizes the true physical essence of his father to kind of like hatch a phoenix, and that phoenix is ashed, and then they use that ash and some of his father's blood to make an elixir. It's really like I love that scene because, like, you're explained none of it, but you know in your gut that, like, this is not cool. Like, none of this is cool. And Daedra, at the precipice of gaining strength very easily to become a high-ranking king, he's like, I can't do it. I want to prove kinghood, kingship of my own potential. And I found some kind of connection with the character there. Like, I don't want anyone to give me an asterisk, right? I don't want no performance enhancing magic, right? I want my achievements to be mine. Because
yeah,
of my
it was just
potential.
A little weird because he was also like, I'm ranked 90th. I need to get stronger ASAP. And she's like, all right, here. And then he's just like, actually, I want to do it myself. And it's like, okay, I mean, you asked me to help you. I try to help you. And then now what?
Right. No, I hear you. But like, that shows this kind of real nuanced, like, he has, again, now he is the man, boy, really, but that has the weight of kingship on his shoulders. He's in the game now. He's got a number. He's number 90.
I think they
best.
Play. I think personally that this show should involve more like the pressures of kingship rather than just like how, like, all of them look like they're having just like a fucking blast. You know what
but
I mean?
That's the thing.
Like,
Daedra,
they just sit on the throne all day long.
Daedra clearly isn't having a blast. He feels like
Daedra's
right?
not having a blast because he's just a little kid and he's just been forced to be ranked against adults.
Right. So he's having this weird internal conflict of like,
but I mean, like,
I need to be stronger now, right? Because that's the duty I now have because of the crown on my head. So
yeah,
I have
but we
to
don't get to see
now.
Them like rule their people. We don't get to see anything like that. We just see like in the underworld, Desha. We just get to see like how prosperous his kingdom is, and that's like our, I guess,
yeah,
gauge and here, of like how well they rule their people.
Yeah, and I will contradict myself a bit because there are a couple scenes right when he gains kinghood, he's doing some pretty unsavory acts of his own, right? Killing any dissenters, you know, he finds out about who voted for and against him, and he tries to take out those that voted against him and for Boji, and that had nothing to do with his own strength. He just, and I went back and evaluated the psychology of that idea, right? Maybe that was because he's so fresh to the game, that's his way, as far as he knows, in enacting some semblance of strength, right? I have not physical strength, but I have strength of position. So I'm going to say, like, all right, you go out and kill the dissenters. I want no one in my party, none of my key investors in my party, in my cabinet, so to speak, to be like even doubting me in the slightest. So, like, in his mind, he's like, I need to get rid of the people who never saw me as a king in the first place. But that's it. That's his inexperience showing. All of this is his inexperience showing.
Yeah,
so,
I feel like that kind of stuff could have been like an interesting look, right? Like you have maybe Boji, who would have been like a really nice king, but potentially ineffective. But then you get Daedra, who's like not a nice king, but potentially effective. Like, I think that could have been a fun juxtaposition that I think they've really missed the boat on. Because, like, right now, we don't even know if he's, like, a good king, like, at all,
yeah,
right?
We don't. And kind of what you were saying, right, is that, like, that should have been stretched out a bit more. I wonder if maybe the pacing looked good on screen, but I wonder if those who read the manga would be unfavorable to the way they are pacing this. Maybe in the manga, this conflict he's having is a lot more drawn out and nuanced, but that you're right. There is a lot more juice to squeeze here with his character before Spoiler Town USA, what happened to him, or more aptly, his body, about mid-season. Because that elixir I mentioned earlier wasn't exactly a strength boost, so to speak. What it was a reincarnation spell for King Boss to come back and take over Daedra's body. So we have the position of Daedra's second son as king, but the witch in the mirror basically strategized this whole kind of fifth level, like fifth dimension galaxy brain chess move to get Daedra to, like, which ultimately he didn't actually do. He had to be forced to drink this. But then because he did that, King Boss came back and inhabits Prince Daedra's body. And now you have King Boss back on the throne, and you kind of learn how shitty of a dad, of a king, of a person, King Boss is. And shitty is a bit of a harsh term, because the man is so obsessed with his own strength and growth that he's willing to transcend death to do so. And, you know, like, I don't know, like, I'm gonna drop
pretty horrific stuff, in my opinion.
You
have a kid just to reincarnate into the kid,
and that's not even the worst thing he did to his kin. I would argue.
What's the worst thing he did?
He made a deal with a demon to take all the giant's strength from his first child before he even had it, and said, like, hey, I can give you the strength to dominate all, be above everybody else. And there was a line in there early before we knew this that said, if we were rating kings just on strength, King Boss would be number one, because he's the strongest human being alive, or a human-ish thing alive. And we learn the reason for that is because he made a deal with the demon that the moment his first child is born, that child will be sapped of all strength potential, and any of that will be given to King Boss, and he will just be, like, bolstered even further therein. And this, we learn, is why Prince Boji is incapable of getting physically stronger, because his father made a deal. It's very much like Dororo. What was the, basically, a deal with the devil? Is that what that show is called? Yeah,
exactly.
Basically, the father made a deal with the devil that just, like, I want prosperity and strength and wealth, and I want my kingdom to thrive. But the demon is like, okay, but your first son is going to be totally stripped and devoid of any potential in whatever way that manifests. And in this show, it manifests that Boji is just absolutely, you know, handicapped in all respects. So he made a really bullshit deal, but we saw a bit of humanity in that. When he finally saw his son being born, his first son, he goes back and try to rescind that deal, but we all know how demons with the demon devils go. You know, those deals don't go well.
You know, obviously. I don't know how I didn't see that, but I didn't know that he took the strength from Boji. I just knew that Boji was cursed. And I also never saw him go back and talk to the demon. Maybe I just was not being attentive.
He tried. He tried to go back and talk to the demon. I don't think that conversation never actually happened. But the conversation that happened prior to his son's birth, Boji's birth, he was like, I want strength. And he says, I can't give you strength, but I can steal strength from your kin. And he says, I don't have a wife. I don't have any heirs.
I saw that part.
And then he said, you don't now, but if you ever do, I'll give you his potential. And he says, fine, because he wasn't a father yet. And once he laid eyes on his son, so small and barren in his first wife's hand, that he's like, oh, fuck. Oh, shit. Because he always truly loved Boji. He really did. And we saw that from episode one. Like, I love you more than anything in this world, but I need you to be stronger. And it's funny, with a dramatic irony, remembering that line after hearing the deal he made, that he feels true remorse for the deal he made, but he wasn't a father yet. Once he became it, he regretted it outright. So that was a very, like, that's a very mature adult thing to have in a show like this, that I've made a huge mistake. And his strength in that moment, he was off fighting somebody, and there was that scene where he, like, healed and got strong, like, infinitely stronger in that moment. And he even said out loud, I guess my first son was just born. He knew what happened.
You know, maybe I just wasn't paying attention much. And I think that kind of speaks to, like, how little I gave a shit about Boss and all these guys.
Fair enough.
I just felt like maybe, like, the story, in my opinion, isn't about them. Or, like, really shouldn't be. And so, like, anytime Boss was on the screen, I was really struggling to, like, give a fuck. I think the fact that he was, like, literally a giant is, like, okay. And then why is Boji a little freaking bean? Like, what?
Why is he a bean?
You know, is that part of the, like, the strength sapping part? Like,
yes. Yes, because he's literally a descendant of, he's a pure-blooded giant. And we saw that because remember the breakfast he makes for Despa and Kage?
Right, that was great.
Like, that was funny. Like, he's an awful cook. Like, literally will poison people on sight. He reminds me of the time I reincarnated as a slime. Shino?
Yeah,
She's an awful cook. And, like, they use her cooking as a punishment for people in that show.
Yeah.
That is Boji to a T, but he eats it and likes it. And that what's funny is because they mention, like, Despa says it to Kage, like, listen, he's a full-blooded giant at heart. His stomach, like giants eat things whole. We're talking entire mountains. They'll eat and just swallow them whole. Like, he still has giant capacity within him. He was just stripped of a giant's strength and capacity for growth.
Yeah, so, I like that. That was a lot of fun, part.
That was really cool.
Because he's, like, cooking, and I'm like, there's no shot this is going to be good, but every time you taste it, he was like, woo!
Yeah, it almost looked like he knew what he was doing, but then when he put the whole egg in with the shell and all, I was like, oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, well, this can't go well.
This will never go well. But yeah, that's what happened. And honestly, like, that was a really interesting take on, you know, we have a lot of stories that there are characters that are lacking capacities. You think Asta and Black Clover, like, he lacks magic due to circumstances outside of his control. It easily could have been universal cosmic luck or lack of luck that he just didn't have that. But we have reason later why Asta doesn't have that magic within him. But in this show, they just did it a lot quicker. That they just let us know that Boji. His lackings are still due to things outside of his control, decisions made before he had any chance to speak to them. But, you know, at the end of the day, he still goes forth despite that. He doesn't know that. I'd like to see what would happen if he learns this fact. But at the end of the day, it's still giving... it gives reason to what otherwise would be a contrivance, and I like stories that do that. Because he could have just been a bean, like, oh, he's, you know, unlucky birth. But it seemed a little bit too contrived that, oh, you have, like, a top 10 king giving birth to you, you just don't have any skill at all, predisposed to never getting stronger. That seems a bit contrived, but they give not just a reason, but a really deep story reason. As to why.
Yeah, I thought it was weird too, though, because, like, when he gets to Des Ha, the second ranked king, they both were supposed to die in the, like, smoke or whatever. And then he goes, why didn't they die? And he, like, uses weird, like, Gyo sight or whatever. And he's like, oh, they're both cursed already. And you're like, okay, now we're getting somewhere.
Yes. Yeah. Cause, like, that was a turning point. I think that was very subtly implanted, but doesn't take a lot of wrinkles to see that, like, one of them was cursed by society, the other one was cursed because they're fucking cursed. Like, well, he was clearly, like, already cursed.
I'm wondering if maybe just Kage's species was cursed, you know what I mean? And then...
That's what I'm saying, right?
The other thing that would have been interesting, I thought, is they showed, like, when Kage's, like, backstory or whatever show happened, there was, like, this idea of this, like, Lightbringer or some shit like that was, like, the people that they were against. And then after that, it just, like, fully did not explain that at all, which I thought would have been kind of an interesting kind of deal to have, like, the light and dark guys kind of come back. But anyway, not really all that important. But I you know, we've been chomping on for a while here now. You know, like, what do you want or expect from the second half?
That's a good question. I kind of want to see, you know, obviously I want to see Boji come back and prove everybody wrong. That's clearly the obvious motif of the show, that, you know, He's learned a lot of new skills. He went to the underworld. He learned what's known as the Despa arts from Despa himself, the man who is known to make ordinary men kings. He seems overpowered right now. Even they said it in the show that he is the most powerful in the world. And when King Boss came back in Daedra's body and was asking the mirror, who's the strongest right now in the world? It was his own son. And he's like, okay. So here's the things I technically want. I want to see Majando, or what's her name? What's the woman in the mirror's name?
I think you have it up. I don't, Manny Joe or something.
Yeah. So, Miranjo.
Yeah, that's right.
Name. Yeah, Lady Miranjo.
I kept
Miranjo.
Thinking Mary Joie, but you wouldn't know what that is.
Enlighten me, my dude.
It's from One Piece.
Oh, god damn it! I cue everyone in the Discord like, oh, fucking watch One Piece, god damn it! But yeah, Lady Miranjo. I want to see what are her motives. She's been very shy. All she's ever said was, "I want to help King Boss." But I want to understand more fully what that means and why she's going to these ends to actually help the king. I want to see.
I don't know. That scene inside, like, wherever Daida's at, was, like, really fucking weird. I couldn't tell if, like, that was an actual historical event.
Oh, that's a good point.
Where, like, he walks up on Kid Mary Joie and. She's like, yeah, crying, and they're like, yeah, she killed all these people. And she's like, I didn't. And then they're like, yeah, we ripped her face off and like chopped her hands off, you know, because she's such a bad person or whatever. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, this just got serious.
So, one, good point. But two, so where I'd like to see the second half of this season go is basically a setup for the actual ranking of kings. And hear me out on this one. King Boss has come back in Daedra's body. And I think him asking who the strongest in the world is and learning it is Boji gave him a bit of comfort. What I want to see is basically Boji penetrate himself so much into the...
Excuse me?
Penetrate himself so deeply into this disrupted kingdom.
Yeah.
And take out all of these convicts that Lady Miranjo has amassed, right? And just totally usurp her plan. And King Boss basically is the final boss, for lack of a better term. And I want to see Boji defeat his dad and his dad say, okay, you are ready to partake in the ranking of kings. I want to see you become number one. And then this second season is a setup that, you know, Boji becomes king. He is now actually king. He's defeated his father, who is considered a top 10 because of the unorthodox method by which he fights and enacts his own strength. And I want there to be a setup that he's about to take on a world of strength and tradition and honor and subvert it all with the way that he has learned to become strong. That's what I want. So I want, by the end of this second part of the season, I want to see King Boss fall at the hands of his son, him to give Boji his blessing, kind of watch. You'll see, like episode 22 or 23, there will be a line where Boss says to Boji, I always knew you could become a strong king. Now go and show me. And now... basically, the word has spread that this kingdom has a level, you know, or a rank 90 king, like a nothing king. Like, oh, you must be the number 90 king. Look at your size. Look, you got nothing. You have nothing. And he just keeps getting stronger, and he just rises the ranks in season two. That's what I want. They shelved that ranking of kings element, and I think they're going to pull it down for season two. But that doesn't happen unless Boji comes in and totally destroys all of the opposing forces that are currently occupying the kingdom he called home. And by the end of this season, he will have a crown on his head in earnest. And then second season, he has to prove it to the rest of the kings. And I think there's going to be a conflict in season two between him and King Desha. Ranked two. And like, oh, last time I saw you, you're a little bitch boy. What you got now? And blap. He comes in and he's like, you got nothing on me. I'm a speedster. I'm a speed god. You have nothing on me. So that's what I'm looking for, is that season two is Ranking of Kings proper, not by name, but by trope. I want to see a fucking king tournament arc.
But well. Yeah,
I want to see it. I want to see it. But if they do that, that'd be a perfect setup. Boji is king by the end of season one, but he's not a high ranking one because everyone heard that this kingdom's got a bitch king leading it. But I want to see Boji prove them all wrong. That's where I want to see it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So here's what I want.
What you want?
I want Boji to essentially create his own kingdom, take Hilling because, you know, the queen mother, she's got to be on the good boys team. I want Daida to not come back because he was a piece of shit. Yeah, he's a kid, yada, yada, weak little bastard. And then I want Boss and Daida's body to essentially have to wage war against Boji's new kingdom. And I want Boji to just go like full sicko mode in this war. And then I also, then that scene that you're talking about where he's going to be like, hey, you're a good fucking king. I always knew you could do it. Will happen.
I always knew you could do it, buddy. I always knew you can champ sport.
Will happen. And then right then, Desha stabs through Daida's back. And everyone's like, what the fuck just happened? And they're like,
oh, shit.
And he goes, you know, I couldn't allow Mary Joie to do this bullshit. And then we find out that Mary Joie was actually Desha's fucking kid. And
what?
Yeah, I know.
Where did you pull this out from? Are you sitting on this for a while? What the fuck?
This is just where I think the story should go. And then I once again do agree that there should be some actual king tournament. Here's my issue with the show. They have this guy just come out and rank the kings, and then you're like, well, I guess that's it. They haven't told you how you rise up the ranks or anything. And it just seems like since the name of the show is Ranking of Kings, there should be more emphasis on like how they get ranked and like how you move up and down the ranks. It's a little wild that there's no like, I guess there's no like circle backage.
Yeah, like we don't know exactly what this organization is that ranks the kings and to what authority do they operate on, right? Like they just come in and tell you you're ranked this. Like whose authority are they ranking? Like I don't understand that.
But like here's what I was thinking. Since he's going to create his own kingdom in my world, and then he'll get ranked, right? Is it then a scenario where you can climb the ranks by capturing all these other kingdoms? Because that would be really interesting. Like you have to go on like insane like war sieges, like war campaigns to rise up the ranks. I think that would be like an interesting kind of complete tonal shift for the show.
So I'm going to try to merge our two ideas. I think because there is actual in-show evidence that a merging of our ideas could actually happen. We saw that Daedra isn't necessarily gone.
Daida,
from this world.
Please. It's not Daedra.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. You're right. I just snap into Naruto mode.
Art is an explosion, damn it.
Art is an explosion, motherfucker. But no. So Daida.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. But he's in the sunken place, essentially. Like, he's in the sunken place. He's essentially trapped within the mind of the body, right? And in that, we see on screen, he's having reminiscence of, you know, his time with Boji, just his own upbringing. And he's like, I'm in complete darkness. There's that one line. I'm in complete darkness right now. Is this the world that Boji knows? Like, I think he's gaining he's gaining an introspective understanding of Boji's perspective because he's never been there. He's always had talent. He's always had the pedigree. He's always been good to go as a king. So what I think we could have happen here is that once we can have both of our cakes and we can eat them all the same, where by the end of season one, Boji comes in. boss challenges him, knowing that Boji has learned some good, tasty shit, gets defeated by Boji because of his unorthodox methods of victory in this world, not strength-based, but some other means. He recognizes that strength, says, I think you can be a great king, decides, and then Daida, damn it, I went Daidera almost, but Daida.
Daidera.
Daidera,
you son
sure.
of a bitch.
You son of a bitch. He comes back and has a more enriched understanding of Boji's perspective, his life, and once Boss is defeated, Daida comes back and says, okay, you should have the king title in this kingdom. And Boji says, no, I'm going to start my own. That's more inclusive and kind of leans on that whole, you know, what we talked about at the beginning of the episode, you know, a kingdom that's more inclusive and open to all of any walk of life, no matter what they are. And then Daida supports his endeavors. So basically, Boji goes off, starts his own kingdom, has an intrinsic ally in his original kingdom. So when he does what you said, wages those sieges and war campaigns, he has an ally of an already pretty established kingdom. But then you have that B-side story of Daida trying to come back from that rating of he was ranked 90th, where Boji is unknown. He is a complete variable in this ranking of kings. And then, wow.
Here's another
Daida
thing I think that's weird.
Yeah.
Daida's mom has like actual magic powers.
Yes, there's light magic in this world. And
why
she's got
the
a good
actual
bit of it.
Ball sacks does he have no ability? Like, it feels like if he had some like special magic too, like his rank could be greatly increased because all they've seen him is like he got shit on by like a big golem and then they're like, well, you're 90th. And it seems
not
a very good like tactical
yes,
ranking.
I can directly answer that, I think. And this is a bit headcanony, but again, this goes back to the system of the world, right? Strength, honor, tradition in fighting in certain styles, right? That you notice magic is relegated to not kings or hands of kings, but they're relegated to queens, hands of like light members of the court, right? They're utilizable, they're useful, but they're not seen as the big players in this ranking of kings, right? And yeah, so like that magic may not play the same way that
so you think
Boji
they're gonna
skill...
have to combat some gender norms.
Mild
gender
bad...
norms, PC culture,
mild gender norms.
PC
yeah.
culture has even taken this show. I can't believe it.
I could, you know what, the show is not it's not immune to that. I think that there is definitely some element here that they could definitely do that for sure.
So in that case, but, here's what I think should happen. Boji should go on a complete murder spree and take down the committee of ranking of kings.
Just dismantle the whole system.
Right. Like fuck this shit.
That is so not Boji though. You know that. He's an evergreen good boy.
Look, he needs to pull up his fucking His Velcro Skechers and go to town.
He's gonna light those bitches up while he stabs them in the pressure points.
Yes.
So yeah, that's where I think there's a merging of what we said will happen in the second core of this season. There is gonna be an element where Boji rises finally to the rank of king. I think most likely what you said might be true. He'll have his own kingdom, but I think I would like to see Daida. God.
Data?
I keep going back to Daedra. Daida. I keep saying Daida. But
Star Trek.
It's some Star
Voyager.
Trek. Shit.
Oh, or, yeah. What is it? Next or whatever the fuck. Anyway.
Next Generation?
Yeah.
Obviously. But the Daida, he's basically gonna like, I'm gonna stay in my kingdom. You go start your own. And he's gonna do that. So we have a king who is eager to move up the ranks.
Though it would be a little cathartic if Daida started his own kingdom, because like he like self-exiles himself, you know, because he did steal it, like relatively from Boji. That could be a fun play too.
So they swap. Like, I'm gonna go start my own kingdom, and I know I have the prowess to start it up because he's all about his own potential, right?
Right.
That's his whole character arc, right? I want to see my own potential, and what better way to do that is to start from ground zero. So You may have Boji, who is intrinsically allied to Daida in his own kingdom, and as Boji rises up, you know, he calls upon Daida,
riding up,
death on the street, but he gets Daida to, you know, help him in those endeavors, and they both rise. And that speaks to both their characters.
Right. Brother Daida, warlords. I love it.
Yes. Daida has his own potential furthered. Boji gets to be altruistic and help another kingdom out that is his own brother's. I can see, yeah, there's a merging of our perspectives that I think is going to happen into the second half of the season and into season two. If the second season does not heavily involve ranking of kings, the actual ranking of the kings,
right,
as their main like follow through, as their main through line, then it's going to be too little too late. Like, it's the fucking name of the show, for God's sake. They can't let that element rest on the shelf collecting dust for too long.
I mean, rank the fucking kings, for the love of God.
Rank the goddamn kings.
Speaking of, like, ranking, Ricky,
yeah,
how do you rank? I just segues at the end of the fucking episode, man.
Holy shit. That's a
how
really
do you
good
rank
segue.
Season one, part one of Ranking of Kings.
Let me swallow how impressed I am with you doing that.
You know, I've listened to you do probably like 100 of them, so, you know.
You figured it out. You figured the formula out.
You just got to look for a buzzword.
Yeah, look for the buzzword and just slap it in. How would I rank this? It's going to be a little high. But just from what I saw, I'm going to go 1 to 12. I'm going to give this a flat 90.
Interesting.
A flat 90, and I'll give you why. It's a mix of what I said up top, the storybook child aesthetic mixed with a very adult nuanced story, and this almost combination of this political drama with a shonen offshoot with our main character. They don't do anything that I think off ways anything right now. They are doing this brilliant balancing act right now. Can I see them teeter off the tightrope and fall 25 stories? Yes, I can at any point. But I think they have enough threads going that they have something to hook onto for the long haul. However they play it, I think they have the game going. And Studio Wit's doing a phenomenal job with the animation. It's fluid. It is true to the aesthetic rubric that they've set forth. And I'm here for it. I mean, I'm endeared to the characters. I'm endeared to the aesthetic. And this could be, you know, we just had season one, the first half, into 2022. We're getting the second half. And I'd be shocked if we didn't get the second season starting in 2023. I'd expect it to start and maybe at the end of 2022. So we could have a very big dark horse IP on our hands for 2022. And I'm going to put my eggs in this basket. I'm going to say 90.
Interesting. I'm going to go 88. And I think, like, overall the story is solid. Main character super endearing and really like this idea of like talking about like disabilities and like essentially harnessing them for good. I think phenomenal kind of through line in there. Even like teaching Daida that like just because he has a disability doesn't mean he's weak, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Really love that. And I do want to say, I think this is the best OP from anything that I've heard this year.
Oh, that first 12 episode OP?
Yeah.
Oh,
and even the 13th episode's OP was actually fucking sick too, so highly
I
recommend.
Liked it, but that for the first half OP could be one of my favorites I've had in the last couple years.
And it fit so well with like the idea.
It did. It was upbeat, and it was just like real like pep in the step kind of thing, and it really spoke to the story's kind of central themes and characters. So I'm in for it, man.
The ED was good too. Anyway, so I wanted to mention this earlier on, actually, but I did not. Hey, okay. If you're a Spotify listener, we've got the ratings up there now. So if you're on mobile, I think, exclusively for some reason. So you can go ahead and click 5 stars for the boys, and that'll help us rank higher on podcasts and stuff like that. And then hopefully more people will listen and, I guess more people will listen. You'll have more weeks more to be friends with.
And listen, like, we know the stats. We know the numbers, guys. Statistically, you're already on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and they both have rating systems.
Right.
So we know it's literally
hundreds
no cost
of you.
To you.
Five-star me. Damn it.
Yeah, literally hundreds of thousands of you are listening on one of those two platforms. So I know for a fact you don't have to go anywhere else but the screen you're already on right now to give us 5 stars. So, I mean, it's an easy calculus. You could just go do it.
Yeah,
not
it's free, damn it.
It's free, damn
it. And it helps
but
the
yeah,
boys anyway.
It helps the boys. But yes, thank you for coming to class this week. Like, comment, subscribe anywhere that actually happens. You can check us out anywhere in the links in the description of wherever you're listening to, and you're already on the platform. Go check out all of our past episodes. You can come over into our Patreon, patreon.com/ubology. $1 and up gets you into the Discord with all of our past guests. We've had some guests in the past couple weeks that have been phenomenal, and you can literally talk to them into our Discord for $1 and up. And all of the lovely Patreon folk. $3 and up gets you into the syllabus sidebar, our lo-fi high vibe, sometimes anime, sometimes not, sometimes visual, and sometimes on hiatus show, where we talk about life and shit and experimental new media formats. We are saying every week that we're getting that going, but actually, I think I found something really fun to talk about this week. So, Ethan, I think we should do that this week.
Yeah,
I have
time it will for actually it. Happen for sure.
Yeah, I have time for it this week, so we can actually do that. So
we're gonna have like a little brainstorm session after this too, and then like maybe some different types of content for maybe like it feels like we want to do like a seasonal something. Like 1 week, and then maybe like a completely different type of content, like alternating weekly.
We've had this nice balancing act. Yeah, this back and forth of like a show we've been watching, and then something more meta, and then a show we've been watching, and then like maybe a guest or something like that. But brainstorming session after this?
Yeah,
can we
just
do it tomorrow?
Quick. No,
it's late. Oh, come
just quick.
On!
You don't have to work tomorrow.
No, I do. I don't have tomorrow off.
It's a freaking tundra.
I promise. I work from home. I'm a programmer.
That's
I work
ridiculous.
From home. I promise. I have to do that tomorrow.
All right.
I'm sorry. But what tomorrow night? Let's have that brainstorming session.
Sure.
For sure. And can we record it on? Let's record that as a sidebar. That's kind of what it was meant to be in the first place, right?
Yeah, you're right. We could do that.
So let's just record. Yeah. Well, you know what? If you're a Patreon member, what we're talking about right now, you can listen to tomorrow. On the syllabus sidebar. And we're just going to brainstorm for the new year because it's like we're fresh in the new year. It's like only been 2 weeks in the new year. We're going to do it. We're going to do that.
Okay, that? Sounds good.
Is it a good compromise? All right, cool. Yeah. Until we get our 2022 in order and the snow in our area melts so we can finally leave our precipices, I'm Ricky.
And I'm Ethan.
And this has been Weebology.
Deuces.
Deuces. You call me out calling it tonight. It's 10:30, dude. What do you want from me?
I didn't expect so much pushback.